You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 137. This episode, Oh Kyle. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Your host, Frankie Mateo, bringing you all the things you need to know about Green Lantern and Green Lantern related material, such as movies, TV shows, comic books, those things in that nature. Of course, helping me today with our reviews on Green Lantern and our talks on Green Lantern is the steam host and people that I have with me, such as Brandon West.
Hello.
Eric Cahill.
Yep, what's happening?
And Colton Clinton.
What's up?
And we're here to bring you everything we could possibly mustered in probably less than an hour about Green Lantern. I know there's so much material we have to cover. But first, Brandon, what do we have in terms of news?
Well, this is not necessarily Green Lantern related, but I thought it was worth mentioning. The new Warner Brothers president, Toby Emmerich, spoke about R-rated superhero movies. We just came off of Wonder Woman being PG-13 and Suicide Squad being PG-13, but Deadpool's got everyone thinking money is in R-rated, and Logan too. Logan made some money. So his quote is, this is great, by the way. "I don't speak comic. I do feel like I speak motion pictures. I speak for an audience. I look and I asked, how does this work for a general audience?" And he says, Jeff Johns says that Toby understands that when we are talking about the characters, we're not just talking about what powers they are. And we're talking about who they are as people. And I thought that was amazing. He also gave an update on when we'll see the sequel to Wonder Woman. Not when we'll see the sequel. What time period we'll see Wonder Woman in her sequel. And it'll be between 1917 and 2017. So that's awesome.
Just sometime in the next 100 years.
I'm going to call bullshit on that.
That's nice and vague. It is a weird, it's not a weird subject to bring up, the R-rated. I mean, we've been talking about that since Deadpool, pretty much succeeded in the box office. We heard all the mumblings about how Batman v Superman was going to get an R-rated cut at one point. I don't know. It's one of those things, if you need an R rating in your movie, if it serves a story, sure. Yeah, if it serves a story, you can make an R-rated movie, and it could have legs. But you don't really need to, just push the boundaries of, make Batman say fuck or Superman say, bitch or something. You don't really need those.
Yeah, you're not going to get rated R-rated for saying bitch. You can say shit, twice in a PG movie before it goes, PG-13.
I think this goes back to what the characters are like and that Marvel tends to lend itself towards those kind of situations, and DC characters throughout history haven't been in R-rated situations. I think
you say that. Well,
I think I think people say that, and we gravitate towards the Vertigo stuff, or, you know, I was about to say childish, but things that aren't really hard are things like the Roy Harper drugs, you know, issue, or even the hard traveling heroes thing. It's like, does DC characters lend itself to that kind of storytelling where you can go graphic and
I mean,
yeah,
we had Injustice where Batman melted Shazam's face.
Injustice is like a game that takes liberties on on the characters.
Point being, well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's also like Injustice is kind of like a teenage boy's version of the DC universe, right? But I mean, like, two things, right? I actually think that the DC universe lends itself more to harder adaptions. I think something like Batman versus Superman is kind of like the only superhero movie that I won't let my like 5-year-old watch, you know, because it's like a way too hard R. But it doesn't actually feel, I mean, I know everybody's a little complaining about that movie. It doesn't really feel out of the realm of DC movies for me, that movie, you know. Marvel, I'd be really, maybe it's just because they've had 20 years of these cookie cutter movies. I'd be pretty surprised if Marvel did something like that. I remember whenever I watched the Marvel Netflix shows, I'm always like, well, it's a little weird. They're using all these cuss words, you know, like, you know, and Batman does say shit in Batman. Anyway, that's stupid. But I think ultimately the argument really is that I probably speak for most people when I'm saying, I think we're all a little grown up and we don't really need to see R-rated superhero movies, you know, like, it doesn't excite me if someone's like, the next Batman's R-rated. I'm like, oh, that sounds like dumb. What is there?
People were pretty excited to see Logan, like Wolverine tearing the people.
Well, I think that's a bit, well, I would say sure, but I think that's a bit different only because the parameters of the character. Always been strange that Wolverine was children's favorite superhero, my favorite superhero when I was my son's age. Always been strange because he has, his power is, he stabs people to death. And if you shoot him, like, blood gets everywhere, but he comes back. So, like, it's the most violent possible superhero, but he's very popular. So, but I think it's a little different. But I would just say, I feel like comic fans are the kind of the same fans that have ever been. Like, we're not really getting a lot of new people in. I feel like we've all grown up at least enough where when you see something like Batman or Superman, it's a little dark, but I don't really, who the hell wants to see an R-rated? I don't know. I just don't get excited. If you're like, oh, man, we're doing R-rated Wonder Woman, fuck you. It actually reminds me of Dean Israel, the guy who did the Power Rangers movie, which seemed like it was going to be a big hit, and then kind of bombed. He had some quote where he was like, you know, the problem was the rating. And people were like, oh, fucking, what does this guy want, R-rated? He's like, no, I had a PG-13 movie, and I should have done a PG movie, you know, because so many people were just avoiding that movie because they thought it was like this PG-13 kick around. And he said, you know, it kind of was, but I didn't think it was all that bad, you know. And he said, basically, if I had a lower rating, I would have got more people. And I think Marvel's kind of set the bar where PG-13 is accepted, but I mean, you know, maybe we should be scaling back these movies. Maybe we should be doing something closer to like a PG or a G rated superhero movie.
You say that, and then there's the rumor that Fox is doing that with Fantastic Four. So,
yes,
I think was something that people kind of said this. Yeah, which people kind of said this. I mean, I actually thought, not that the last Fantastic Four movie was good, but the concept of turning it into like this body horror movie was a cool idea. So I wouldn't have, but you know, I think. I mean, what's one of the best superhero movies ever made? The Incredibles. What's a movie that's pretty much the perfect Fantastic Four movie? The Incredibles. And, you know, that movie's not PG-13, you know? So, I mean, I think them kind of scaling it back, being like, let's do something more kid-friendly with the franchise, is like, yeah, sure, why not, you know? I mean, Dr. Doom is ridiculous. Like, we don't, you know, he doesn't actually need to make people's faces explode to be Dr. Doom, you know? So, I don't know. I'm not like one of those guys like, let's all bring it back to kid stuff. There's plenty of variety. I don't really think, like I said, they put Injustice on screen, I'd be like, fuck that. I don't want to see that. You know, I'm a grown man. Like, yeah,
I totally understand that. I will say that Marvel has pretty much like their brand down pat. I mean, the only real big hit, you know, R-rated comic book movies is from Fox, because they're trying to push the envelope, because most of their franchises have really been, you know, stellar as of late.
That's a good point. Yeah, they have to, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like Marvel keeps theirs PG-13, you know, in that realm, and they're pretty much like, you know, just keeping it on board, you know, just trying to grasp for all, let's try to get, you know, people, you know, people's attention, because we're making our superhero movies a little bit more darker and gritty. I mean, we already saw that with what happened with most of DC's, like, you know, lineup, and that hasn't really worked out well for them.
If Arrow was as gory or as loose with language as Preacher is, which is with a Vertigo comic on AMC, you guys would be like up in arms, like, because Green Arrow doesn't need to be that violent. I mean, the worst he got was like,
it's interesting because,
you know, blood everywhere on like a character.
I would say something because, as someone who's like, I mean, I'm kind of like I'm a big fan of the character, and you know, like read millions of Green Arrow comics, whatever. I mean, like, a lot of his more famous runs have a kind of a darker edge. If you have something tonally that's close to like Batman versus Superman, that kind of like it's kind of unremittingly dark, but there is a certain amount of flair to it, it'd be fine. I think something like Arrow, the success of the show was that it was kind of quote unquote darker when it started, but now it's kind of, you know, one of the many things wrong with that show. It's like now it's kind of in this juvenile era of like, of grittiness. Like it should have ended years ago because it's still so gritty, and it's like, but because it's on network TV, it's like cartoon gritty, you know, like, and I think if that show was a movie, I mean, they wouldn't have added blood and boobs and stuff. And if they did, it would seem kind of silly, because that's a good example you bring up, because that show benefits from not being able to go all the way with cursing and Netflix shit and all that stuff. Because if they did, it would seem silly. Like something like Daredevil gets away with it because it's got really talented people on it and stuff. Arrow doesn't have that kind of creative control. You know, it succeeds because of the limitations and stuff. You know, like, we can watch it and be like, oh, Arrow's kind of dark, and that's good. But it's not, like, dark. It's still got a guy in a purple and orange suit with super strength punching through walls. Like, you know, the big conflict is, you know, will Arrow murder somebody for revenge against this magical shaman? I mean, it's still silly, you know? Like, but if it goes too far, I mean, you know, it shouldn't be... That's kind of like the sweet... Well, at least it was the sweet spot of, like, adult-oriented, but, like, hey, this is kid stuff, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I was rolled out. Do we really want to see, like, Scarlet Witch or Wonder Woman naked in their own, like, boobs? I mean, what are we, like, I mean, Batman walks past a bunch of naked women, or, like, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know.
And then,
I
mean, again, remember, R-rated doesn't necessarily mean being nude in their own movie. It could be many other things.
I mean, yes, right. But I mean, like, for me, the terminus point, the idea of, like, well, what do we get? Like, you know, want to see someone Wonder Woman punch a guy's face off? I mean, like, you don't want to see that. So it's one of those things where I like the idea. I think the argument for me is you have to keep it in a certain realm of not as serious, you know, because once you start getting a little bit more serious with certain franchises, you know, it's a little goofy. I think that was one of the big problems with the Wonder Woman movie, that they try to do like real world war stuff, like, oh, PTSD and stuff, but they had to kind of scratch it back more than they really might have wanted to. So you ended up kind of this weird thing where she's like, oh, war is hell, but it's also kind of really fun and goofy, you know? So but then the other hand is Captain America, where the guy, they tone down war so much that he has to fight like a secret cult of Cobra, you know, like, so, which it makes it a little toothless. So I don't know, it's a sweet spot.
Colvin, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's like there are two ways about this for me. It's like, on one hand, you know, you can make a great superhero movie and like make it like Peach or whatever. I mean, one of my favorite comic book adaptations all the time is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it's perfectly fine as a PG movie. You don't have to make it PG-13 to make it even more accurate to the comics, and it'd be perfect. But when you go to stuff like, you know, sometimes you do need an R, because like, when you look at a lot of horror movies, they go like, oh, we can get a lot more audience with a PG-13 movie, but then you get like a PG-13 slasher, it's got no teeth, you know? I just feel like, in a situation-by-situation basis, you should base your movie on what it needs to be, not just what will get the most audience. If your movie needs to be PG, make it PG. If it needs to be rated R, make it rated R. But don't just, you know, don't just pussyfoot around on it.
Okay. Brandon, what else we got?
It's been a while since we've recorded, guys. Have any of you...
Don't pull the curtain back and let the audience know.
What? They've been fiending. Have any of you played Injustice 2?
A little bit, but I haven't gotten very far.
I've seen the entirety of the story.
Okay. I'm partially into the story.
I have not finished the game. I will say, having not played the first one, I thought it was really cool. This is a really fun game, and I hate fighting games. The animations... the special combo moves are really, really cool, and easy to do, thankfully, because I suck at fighting games. And the storyline is weird because I didn't play the first one, so it's a lot of weird things going on. You don't know who's alive or who's dead. Alliances are all over the place, but I thought it looks great on my my modestly big screen and my PlayStation 4. I enjoyed it. I really do. And I think there's a scene or a part of the game where you get to choose whether you want to play as Black Canary or Green Arrow. So I chose Black Canary first, and then I chose Green Arrow the second time. Green Arrow is so cool. I just wanted to point that out. He's so cool.
Okay, I mean that's your
yeah, my review and analysis, just like, no one can beat me if I have Green Arrow.
I'm half partial playthrough again.
You have to challenge Ben for that one, I think.
I would say given my initial thoughts on the game, it's good. I can't give it like a perfect score. It's a good game. The fighting mechanics are fine. The character selection is fine. The armor customization is cool. It gives everyone an interesting look. You can make your own custom characters. You have your own shaders. You can give yourself. You don't have to look like a strictly black Dark Knight. You make yourself into a winter coat for some reason. Also, the other sort of changes in certain characters that you can make into different characters, such as Supergirl to Power Girl, Captain Cold to Mr. Freeze. Cool additions like that make the game very popular. I will say, however, in my honest opinion, the story structure of this game is lesser than the first game. I know Brandon hasn't played the first game. He doesn't know the story of the first game. But the first game story for me is a lot stronger than the second game story. Mainly because the second story is pretty much cut and paste. Hey, what happens if Brainiac shows up? Much like every other freaking Superman story that's ever been with Brainiac coming into Bottle City. It's the exact same thing. It's just this time Superman is, I don't know, a bigger dick than normal. It's
impressive.
It's a weird storyline that doesn't really have as much bite as the first one does. Because where can you actually go when you have, hey, what happens if we make Superman into a tyrant? You get a really, really good story. And then this time it's like, hey, what if we have Superman as a tyrant, but let's keep him on the back burner while we deal with Brainiac? Yeah, there's a lot of weird backhand deals and shenanigans that happen in the story that doesn't really lead into the whole alien tyrant thing. So it's, I don't know.
It seems kind of like the worst case scenario.
Yeah, it's
for that
it's,
kind of thing. I mean,
I don't want to spoil it. I will let everyone, all listeners, pretty much like, you know, get their own opinion on the game. It's still fun. It's still a very, very competitive game. And if you enjoyed the fighting mechanics of the first game, you'll still enjoy the fighting mechanics of this game. So I do recommend you playing it for yourselves.
You know, did we ever talk about, many moons ago, Lego Batman 3? I know it's a little tangential. But I don't think we ever fully grasped how that was kind of like the ultimate Green Lantern game. You know,
was that the one? What was that, Beyond Gotham or something?
Yes.
Yeah, it came out like just as soon as the New 52 started, so it's actually not that old, but it's pretty old. But, you know, yeah, you just... And I didn't realize, actually, it's funny because I, you know, played it a bunch of times. You know, there's a lot of Green Lantern-oriented levels, and you go to the different color lantern worlds and all the stuff, you know, I love, because everybody knows I love all the multicolored lanterns, except the people that know me. But, like, I didn't realize it's my son started playing it, and I did not even realize, because I lost interest in it shortly after I started with it. It's fine, I just didn't really care. But then it's like legitimately, like, it's practically just a Green Lantern game. I mean, it's like there are maybe 10 times as much Green Lantern content in that game than there is, especially Batman content. But it's like, I mean, there's White Lantern Kyle Rayner in there, and I was like, what the fuck are you doing here right now? Like, it was very goddamn strange. All the bonus levels are like,
wow,
Odin and shit, and I was like, Odin. Anyway, so I'm just saying, you'll see that coming in a special episode pretty soon. I hope not.
We'll give you our playthrough of Lego Batman.
It's 3. It's fucking, you know, Duck Dodgers as Green Lantern is.
I mean, you've already said White Lantern, Kyle Rayner. That
pretty much has most people sold. I will say, hilariously enough, I did finally see the Lego Batman movie. Green Lantern in that movie? No. Minimum.
He shows up at the party, yeah.
Shows up at the party, that's about it.
Hey, well, he's also in the Lego movie. We don't discuss this. Hill does the Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
He does it in the Lego Batman movie too, so that's awesome.
But it's the same guy.
He did have a line in Lego Batman, though, so...
Is he still wearing the Ryan Reynolds suit?
I don't think so.
No, he was wearing the plastic suit in the Lego movie, right?
Bullshit. Actually, one of the things I liked about the Batman movies, they didn't feel the need to use, like, modern suits and stuff. It was cool to see, you know, Superman. Anyway, that movie was cool.
Okay, Brandon, what else we got?
That is it, Frank.
Man, you told me there was a lot more news than just this.
Yeah, I mean, we've been gone so long, it's all irrelevant now.
You lied to me, Brandon.
I did.
You lied.
I mean, the few things that I've probably mentioned, again, not Green Lantern related, but they have released the casting for, or pretty much the synopsis and casting for the Teen Titans, or the Titans show that's going to be on their CW app. I know that's going out there. Ooh. There is apparently going to be a cyborg in that show, which is weird.
But no Teen Lantern.
What about Kid Flash? Is there a Kid Flash?
There's not a Kid Flash. I'm not watching.
There's
a Beast Boy. They have a goddamn TV show with Kid Flash.
There's a
Beast Boy.
There's a cyborg.
Now.
There's a Raven. There's a Starfire. But apparently they have different names. So they're not it's not like Garfield, Logan, Beast Boy. He's like named something else.
Well, Garfield is just like size.
It might not even be Dick Grayson Nightwing. He might be actually called something else.
Richard Grayson?
Well, to be fair, those were casting names that we saw. Like,
yeah, sometimes in casting they use different names and stuff. Right. Like,
so they don't get... It's like, people only realize it because the description's like, oh, this sounds exactly like Titans.
Yeah, I mean, and when they... For Arrow this year when they brought in... They even used it in the show when they brought in the fifth or sixth Black Canary on that show. She was cast as Tina Bolland, and then in the episode, she hilariously said her name was Diane Drake. So, I mean, like, you know, you get that a lot. So, I think they're casting Richard Dragon now or something for Arrow next year, and his name is, like, Ricardo Montillas in, like, the casting sides and stuff. So, but it would be weird if they announced that this is for the Teen Titans show, and it's Marshall Gogan. It's like, no, I know that's Garfield Logan. It's like, no, actually, we're just going to call him Marshall Gogan for some reason in the show. So maybe it's a copyright thing.
Could be. Well, that was our news. That was pretty much everything that happened in the world while we were gone, or, you know, a portion of it. Now we're going to move on to our reviews on the Green Lantern issues that came out. Again, we had not been recording for a while. We had been in a little bit of hiatus. So we're going to give our impressions as to what into the conclusion of the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern core book that happened, and the pretty much like the few issues that came out in the Green Lanterns recently with the training of Simon Bass and Jessica Cruz. And those were issues like 22 to 24, something like that. Brandon, what do you think of the small little sojourn of the characters going off into space and pretty much training with Kyle Rayner and Guy Gardner?
For the most part, I thought it was just a fun little getaway adventure. I didn't think it needed to be done. But I guess eventually we would all ask why Jessica hasn't had any interactions with the main four guys. So I'm glad it was done. There wasn't any, you know, big surprises or big hiccups. There was, I think it was issue 24 where, Simon is fighting Kyle, and he's like, It was so poorly written. Like, the jokes were just so cheesy. I'm gonna try to pull it up now. It was so bad.
This is a level where Kyle was being ridiculous, like unnecessarily ridiculous. Like, yeah.
You're saying it's not Michael Jackson's bad, but it's just actually bad.
I read this to a friend of mine, and they were just like, this is why no one likes comics. And I was like, yeah, if this was my first comic, I was like, that no one.
He threw up and he slapped you.
Like, yeah. He was like, take that, Mr. Funny Pages. And I was like, why would you write that? Why would you write that?
I mean, to kind of tangent off of that while you're looking, it's interesting because I feel like they're reading that, it definitely felt like a deliberate throwback. I mean, in this way, that was super, super obvious. And I, as I'm reading it, I'm like, I don't know if I buy into this or not. Like, I get why it's charming and I get why it's funny. And I actually liked it. You know, I think it was one of the stronger issues, I guess, of the series, if I'm, you know, that I'm remembering anyway. And it's like, but it's definitely a throwback. It's definitely corny. I mean, it's obvious from step one that Guy Gardner's just going to get in her face until she hits him. You know, and it's obvious from step one that Kyle is trying to train Simon to be creative. And it's actually kind of frustrating to root for characters like Simon and Jessica that are just so stupid that they don't realize
it takes them two whole issues.
It takes like two issues to realize they're in the oldest story about superheroes ever told. That's a constant theme with this series, like that the characters are just so fucking behind the audience. It's like, you know, I remember the Dr. Polaris issues. I was just like, get off the fucking page, guys. I don't even need you here right now. Like, so it's like, but it, I thought, it, like I said, yeah. I mean, if you don't buy into that whole thing, then it's hard to read something like that, you know, with modern sensibility and stuff. But if you do buy into it, it's probably super funny and charming and stuff. You know, like, I think Kyle was beyond absurd. I mean, Humphrey seemed to have jumped onto. I mean, I guess we saw him do it in a previous issue. That Kyle was just unnecessarily upbeat, ridiculous. Like, he, you know, like. But he kind of seemed to jump into the characterization of him over the Hal book, where he was kind of the funny guy. But he's like the funny guy. Like, you know, like, okay, stop. You know, he's like Aziz Ansari or something. You know? So it's like, just leave it alone, man. But but I thought it was kind of charming. I thought it was kind of funny. It's like, why is Guy allowed to do this to people? I just don't understand. and it's also like, I don't. When I'm reading that, I was like. It's hard for me to think of Jessica and Simon as people that are like, you need to be trained. And I guess they had a caveat with Simon. They're like, oh, you've been trained. We just need to freshen you up for a bit, you know? And like, and then Jessica still has that, oh my God, I'm not good enough. It's like, I get that that's your shtick, but it's like, I mean, come on, you've done a lot. And this guy's an asshole. Like, you know, like, just get over yourself. Anyway, but I found it charming, but I can understand why it's a very comic book thing. Hopefully a deliberate throwback and not just lazy writing, but I'll give the writer the benefit of the doubt, you know what I mean?
Okay, Brandon, continue with your thought.
Did you find the dialogue?
Yeah, no.
I thought you were looking for the dialogue, sorry.
Yeah, no, I know. I don't have much else to say. I thought the art in Green Lantern's 24 with Carlo Barbieri, I think that's it, how you pronounce it. It was interesting. I think he definitely has a dynamic view of things. The colorist could have helped him out a little bit because Jessica changes her skin tone like crazy. But I wouldn't mind seeing him actually have something to do. And it was cool to actually get someone make use of these Green Lantern rings. Like, we don't see enough creativity when these Green Lanterns are out there fighting. It's most of the time it's just beams and fire trucks, you know.
Damn shame! That's the most creative power of the universe. They should be doing shit with it.
They should, absolutely. And so while Kyle doesn't do anything overtly impressive or overly impressive,
I mean, if the mood hits you, you should be able to kill someone with the entire recreation of Les Mis.
That, I mean, how? Which part of Les Mis would kill you, Colton?
No.
Part of the guy.
You play the entire the damn thing.
Is it him getting out of prison? Is it the depression in general, or is it the war?
The whole thing.
You just make him so hungry he becomes a prostitute. Like dock worker, shaves his head. It's a real fucking bummer.
That was the worst part of the movie.
I don't think you're allowed to be a Green Lantern if you do that kind of thing. FYI.
If you like Les Mis,
is literally disemboweling people and stuff, and it's like, good job, guy. Anyway.
Okay, so Colton, what do you think of the issue? This was again what I we were just talking about.
Which was, didn't you know, just miss that?
Yeah, because I feel like I didn't read those issues. Did I mention that?
I was gonna
That's
say.
True. That's true. You did not read this. I was
pretty sure, because I remember a little bit of the training, but I was like, I don't think I read this particular
issue. Well, it's like five issues, yeah.
It's my weekly schedule. They pump them out too fast.
30, 40 issues of this.
Okay.
You take a month off, and suddenly you're like, oh, crap, there's like three issues sitting here.
Okay. So, pretty much like my thoughts on the two issues itself. I enjoyed them. You know, the whole thing about, you know, it is the oldest cliche in the book, much like Eric was saying, that, you know, how, you know, Jessica needed to punch guy and Simon needed to be a little bit less, you know, rigid in his creativity. It's fun. The one thing that I will say is like the setup for the actual overlining story that's happening with Rami and, you know, Volthoom was actually pretty interesting. Like the original seven rings that apparently were created and sent out, and we get to see like, you know, the first rings being intercut, choosing their lanterns in the book. So we get to see like the White Martian years back, like received their ring for the first time. It's an interesting setup. I do definitely want to see where it goes. Which brings me into the 25th issue that also came out that I also wanted to talk about, which was the anniversary issue, which, you know, Eric has a problem it being called an anniversary issue, but it's.
They're not particularly. I was talking to you guys about this before the show. They're not particularly celebrating any anniversary. Is it an anniversary of a thing, or is it because it's the 25th issue? If it's the 25th issue, it's the 25th month anniversary of the first time the issue's been published. I mean, which is, I guess, fine. If you're in a relationship, you say this is the 25th anniversary of when we started dating month-wise, and they're like, oh, that's kind of cool, I guess.
I mean, we should also try to look up whether or not it's the actual anniversary of, like, the first issue of Green Lantern to ever come out was, you know, during that time, or that week.
Maybe, hopefully, I will say hopefully not, because this wasn't particularly good anniversary issue.
That's also very bad. Pretty much didn't really have anything to do with any other Green Lantern or Hal Jordan.
I assume in the modern era they could just, you know, Wikipedia that shit. Just like, okay, this was this date. Okay. It's not like in the old days you're like, oh, crap, I have to track down the old issues.
If your boyfriend is like, hey, man, it's our 25th month anniversary, you're like, that's cool, but we celebrated the 2-year anniversary a month ago. That seems like a big deal. 25th month anniversary seems like a funny joke. Like, you know, so it's very, I mean, essentially they could say they could celebrate the 23rd and the 24th. Issue as an anniversary. So, I don't know. I think it should have said milestone issue, but that might have felt like they were being a little too ostentatious, so they put anniversary on there to try to sell an extra.
Well, if they put milestone issue on there, then they'd have felt bad about milestone.
I thought it was disrespectful, so that's my thing.
Okay. Well, the 25th issue itself, anniversary or not, you know, done by Sam Humphries and Robson Rocha back on the book, because we've been missing him in the last two issues. Pretty much like just gets the boat rolling with the whole Rami trying to get the or Volthoom trying to get the travel lantern bag in first hand and the first ring, and we get to meet again more Green Lanterns that were originally chosen. If anyone wants a context, it's pretty much like that one Green Lantern movie that came out a while back, not First Flight, but the other one. What was that one called again?
Emerald Knights.
It's very much like akin to that with the stories of like the first lanterns being chosen. But it's interesting. It also has a sword in it, which is funny. But Carlton, I know you read this issue. What do you think?
I did read this issue. All that build-up for Volthoom, and he finally acts. He finally reveals himself for who he truly is. I feel like this has been a long overdue thing. It's like they should have done this like maybe like 3-4 issues ago. Am I wrong here? It's kind of vibe I get.
Yeah, I was kind of sick of it.
It's like, but at least now it's out in the open. He's done something, and something has clearly gone wrong. I mean, are we about to see our new lanterns go on their first multiversal adventure? Because if so, that's pretty exciting. I'm always down for a little multiversal travel. Because Volta mentioned that he was from the Earth 15, which was the perfect universe before the Earth was destroyed. There's that whole thing about the cosmic grail from the little multiversal guide that we got from Multiversity, and I'm wondering, is this trying to tie into that?
I mean, I'm sure us Humphreys is like, you know, is digging into that multiverse chart that was created for a reason. So,
I don't doubt he looked at the chart, yeah.
A part of me is just hoping at this point that, you know, if we're going to go back to Earth 15 and Volthoom, we got to have a Volthoom fight a Superboy Prime. Let's be honest, board, he never stays dead.
It's going to be on the message boards. Yeah, it's going to be on the message boards on DC's you know, All Access. I mean, Earth 15 is also supposed to be the home of the three-boot Legion in the future. So,
Oh, right. You know what would be amazing? Is if Voltron actually beats Superboy Prime, Prime gets pissed, goes back to his own Earth, downvotes and just destroys all copies of the comic, so his comic gets canceled and just dies.
Downvotes.
Downvotes, yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm Superboy Prime.
This is all the rage and about how things used to be better before all the shit.
That shit was hilarious in context. Anyway, yeah.
But yes, overall, you know, I thought it was a pretty interesting issue. I mean, like, it's setting up some pretty interesting locations, and Voltron, like I said, finally acts, which is something I've been wanting for a while, because, like, you know, I get the whole skulking around, you know, using your secret position to take advantage of things, but it's like, it just felt like at this point, it's like, how long has he been in that form? Because it feels like a long-ass time.
Mm-hmm. So, he's been in that form since what? The ending of, I'm forgetting the Lantern, Universal Lantern, or whatever it was called.
The brand new baguette who was so great that none of us can remember who he was.
Yeah,
his name
was Frank something.
Frank Guy, you know, Guy Frank. He was the something or other Lantern, you know, that guy. Yeah.
The Gray Lantern of Apathy.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, it's just like, I just feel so bad for Simon Baz. I mean, like, it's like the universe is timed to dramatically screw him. I have to make it to my brother's birthday. I have to. It's his like, you're going to get sent to another universe.
His brother-in-law is a fucking baby, by the way. He's a fucking child. Like,
How dare you try to save the universe and not spend enough time with me?
I didn't want to
bring that up
so bad. But yeah, so anyway. Yeah. Brandon, what do you think of the issue?
I thought the art was good. I thought it was different. It looked different, as if the colors were different. But Alex is the usual color, so that threw me off. I guess it could have been inking, but that was the usual inker. So it was strange. It definitely had a different feel to it. And I'm surprised that it was just Robson Rocha, considering. You know, he's being pulled off the book any given moment. And, you know, this was a exercise issue. So props to him for doing that, the work.
Well, he knew it was a special anniversary of something. Yeah.
The issue was fine. I thought it was fine. I think it mostly looked better than it told a story. But, I'm distracted because I was just reminded of the Hal Jordan issue.
Emerald Knights.
We're gonna, yeah, that too. But yeah, I thought it was a good read. I thought it was a little heavy-handed with the Nazir stuff as usual. I guess it bothers me that he just doesn't understand that his brother-in-law is a superhero. It's just like, I have things to do other than, you know, street race. Like,
what does he even want Simon to do?
He just wants him to spend time with his wife and his child that he's neglecting.
Like, you have a family. Like, get a life.
I guess it's not that. It's not just hanging out. I guess at first it was like, hey, pay rent. Like, you know, you're living here. And now right. It's like, hey, be in my life somehow. It's like,
and pay rent.
It's a sliding scale. It's a sliding scale.
It seems like abusive, man. It's like, you don't spend any time with me. Well, I'm going to go in a coma. What? Get out of the coma. I'm out of the coma. Where's my rent? And then he leaves to do his job. He's like, you've been out of town for 3 days. I need to come home. And then I don't want to get it. You're talking. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I enjoyed
it. It's like his birthday, and he's like, how many minutes to midnight? She's like, three.
Three minutes.
It's like, and it's funny because she's kind of like, it actually sort of works. Because Nazir's wife is like seeing him standing in the middle of the kitchen at 3 minutes to midnight, holding a letter angrily, and she's like, "Hey, what's going on?" Like, because she knows what's going on. He's being weird, or maybe she doesn't. Because then he's like, "What?" You know, like, "Oh, it's three." What? And she's like, "Oh, it's 3 minutes to midnight." And he's like, "Ugh." And she's almost like, "Hey, why are you asking me that? Like, did you not remember it's your husband's birthday tomorrow? That's fucked up. No wonder he needs Simon." so badly. Like, the holes. I kind of understand, because if you have, or you're friends with someone, you don't see them for a while, you get pissed, and you know, I mean, we all have had people in our lives that are important to us, and you know, there's periods where they got to work or they're doing something. You get
maybe
a little angry.
He just needs a babysitter for that crazy kid.
Yeah, they do what they have to do. But it's just, it is a little absurd for Simon to, like, dude, we're just friends. Like, I mean, what do you want me to do with you? Like, what do you, I mean, not so much like, I have to be Green Lantern. What do you expect me to do? But, like, literally, when I come to the house, what are we going to do, man? It seems like all we do is talk about different things I don't do for you and, like, pancakes, I guess. Like, it's just, really.
It's like he's showing up to, like, his cop friend's, you know, beat and be like, why don't we hang out anymore? It's like, I'm on patrol, you asshole.
And then it's like, he goes to his house and he's like, what do you want to do? You want to race RCs? You want to play PlayStation? You want to watch Better Call Saul? He's like, no, I don't want to do any of those things. Where's my rent? It's like, weird.
Dick.
It's weird.
He's
very
and
it's passive like,
aggressive.
I mean, I like the relationship. It's interesting in terms of the idea of he's best friends with his brother-in-law, but it just seems so weird that, like, Simon is going through all this stuff in his life and he has all these complicated issues, and it's with his brother-in-law, and his sister just indifferent to both of them, like, does not care if they're dead, like, doesn't care that Simon's in space, doesn't care about her husband's stupid birthday. Like, I mean, maybe she's just used to his shit. She's like, I'm not friends with either one of you because you're both fucking children. But anyway.
A part of me just wonders if Simon's just be like, you know what, you want to hang out? Fine. Just grab him in a bubble, take him out into space on patrol. You want to see? Here you go.
I think that's probably what we're going to get. He's just gonna have to fly him around the city or something,
and then he's going to die in an accident.
Technically, Hal Jordan does it to his own, you know, his own brother.
Hey, then take a tip from Hal.
Martin into space. But it's just also it's also a terrible choice. And you know,
well, I like too that he's like he talks about a Mercedes or something. He's like, oh, I saw you writing all those specs out for the car, and I'm gonna make that car with my ring, and we're gonna drive it around. And it's just, I mean, that I don't know. For me, that's kind of like, you know what? When I get back, we're going to go to the car dealership and we're going to pretend we're going to buy that BMW. And you and I are going to drive around for at least 45 minutes. It's like, I don't know, man. Like, Nazir is a sad fucking dude. That's what he needs to hear to feel better about himself. I'm just saying.
he just needs a Ferrari and a new outfit.
Okay.
Nazir is the worst. Nazir is the fucking worst. Okay. Nazir is like the Barbara in season one of Gotham.
Tell
fucking
me
the city of this comic, man.
So I will say, like, you know, the issue itself, it is weird. It's also like the third.
It's like the last part of the oversized issue, by the way. We're nitpicking.
Yeah. But, it's literally the last page before like the crazy.
How did he send the letter? Like, how did he send the letter? Like,
he just left it. He just wrote it the entire time and just left it there.
Oh, I missed that part.
But the funny thing, this is like the third time we get a Volthoom sort of redesign. Now he's like an old man. It's like,
He looks awesome, by the way.
He does look awesome.
I think it looks cool. But I thought it was the art more than anything. But he did look cool.
He did look cool. I kept wondering whether or not they were trying to like reference something when they actually gave him a form, like, you know, a physical actual shape. Because, you know, the last few times we've ever seen Volthoom,
he's had the bald head and stuff.
He has a bald head. He has pretty much been translucent energy. He's been, you know, a dying specter in Necron's field, and he's been.
In his origin, I think they showed him. Yeah, I think in his origin issue, they showed that
they
he was
show,
like.
They do show him a like a younger version of him. So this is the first time we actually see him aged, which is weird because, you know, sure, you would think he would recreate his body to be what it was when he was first.
That's a good point. Like, is he 10 billion? That's what he looks like when he's 10 billion years old. Because I was thinking the same thing. Like, he doesn't have a beard or his hair is all there. So, yeah, like, this is
he's being very generous when he created his own body. It's like, which is also weird.
He's like, well, I don't want to be. He's like, what? Well, I can bring myself back however I want.
First thing,
I don't want to be a fucking asshole. So at least I'll look a little old, you know. Like, I don't want to be like a prick. You know, I'm a little humble.
Maybe he's like, these scars give me character.
I think it's the armor was like supposed to look like a battery, right? Like, yes. which just like, oh, I was like, is this a reference? I was like, well, it kind of looks like the Alex Ross Kingdom Come Green Lantern armor, but I'm like, oh, that's because they both look like batteries. That's really all it was, I think. So.
That's true. That is actually a good call. The funny thing about the entire like sequence where you see him actually regenerate his body first, it's cool. Yeah, I like all the real smoke effects. It is weird because at first I was like, is he turning Rami's body into his new body, but then you see his body, like Rami's body discarded to like the side, like on the floor, and Jessica goes like, he's still breathing. I'm like, huh. I'm surprised he's there.
What happened to Rami himself, like his inside, you know? Did he get separated out, or is it like in there just subconsciously? I can't remember.
He was subconsciously pushed back. It was made clear.
So is he still there?
Yeah, he's still there.
He's still talking to him.
Yeah, because we all really care about Rami, the character.
I mean,
he's been there since the beginning.
I mean, he's becoming such a popular character. Again, if anyone's reading, you know, Green Lantern.
Remember, he was there at Kyle's birthday.
No, if anyone's reading Green Lantern and Planet of the Apes, he's there. Rami's character is in that crossover.
Is he really?
I got pretty mad. Yes. When I
is Sam Humphries writing that story?
Sam Humphries is not writing Green Lantern. The
past. How? Okay, they got some great editing going on that we haven't seen.
I mean, they're obviously keeping all the characters that they want. You know, all the, you know, Guy Gardner's there, Orisa, Sinestro, Rami, Kyle Rayner's still dead. It's they're keeping all their favorites.
Can we talk about the Brainiac bit?
Oh, the Kaluans, yeah.
Well,
Green Lantern Kaluan.
No, it's actually in this 25th issue anniversary.
Kaja Docs.
We get to see what are they called? They're called Galoons, but their planet is called Malfia?
I was like, Frankie, they're called lesbians, but okay.
That too. They were just kidding. Beautiful lesbian couple. But well,
they could
I love
just
it. It's like
be
they're breaking
like
barriers, man.
Really?
The first Brainiac lesbian
roommates.
Dude. No, they're lesbians.
Interesting. Did they say she had a third level intellect? Is that supposed to be the highest on the planet? I seem to recall eighth level intellect being the standard and Brainiac being 12.
Brainiac being the 12. Well, I don't recall standard
that. Hey, man.
It is
it could
also
be like caveman.
And
yeah, that's
years.
Like that's homophobic, Colton.
Yes,
I'm just saying. Like, I'm trying to remember if this is a retcon or if like
no. If you pay attention to the actual like you know year it's supposed to be taking place, it's millions of years in the past.
Yeah,
so.
It's like billions of years ago.
Oh, yeah. So it's early on in the origin. Okay, so that's why.
Yes.
Well, I think art was fantastic. Yes, no doubt.
Robson
really, really, really
coloring was fantastic. Just,
Killer art. Really, really. Like, spoiled me with the book. Like, I mean, I even like how he drew Simon's. I didn't like the way Simon's mask looked because he made the nose really big. But I like that because it just is one of those, like, details that, like, realistic artists do. Sometimes they'll add oversized parts or they'll add seams where there shouldn't be seams. You know, because Simon, if he has a mask like that, his nose would be a little big to fit on his nose. So I think that was, anyway, really, really cool art. And as Frankie said, I kind of liked all the vignettes of like the first team of Lanterns and stuff, but the pacing was really awkward because Volthoom comes out of his like I'm Volthoom, and then all of a sudden the story stops for like three pages to show us this Brainiac thing, and then comes right back to Volthoom being like anyway I'm Volthoom. Like
it's funny because that sequence that you're talking about is also a very weird stop because after that three pages of like Kaluan, you know, masterfulness. It's just
clue and canoodling.
we come right back to Volthoom, and Volthoom is just inside of a weird Green Lantern structured prison that's apparently made from Simon's ring. Doesn't look.
Oh yeah,
like
we never see them react. Yeah, we don't get a reaction shot of Simon and Jessica being like, "Well, our weird guardian friend has just been turned inside out by like."
And he's halfway across the room, by the way.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, that's a good point. What spatial relationship is terrible? Yeah.
I will say that they do a recreation of one of my least favorite sequences in Identity Crisis, where Deathstroke, you know, grabs Kyle's ring. Goes like, I have a theory. If my will is stronger than yours, I can break your will with your ring. That doesn't make any sense. But
that was because that writer really, really didn't
really
like
hated Kyle.
Brad Mitzel fucking hates Kyle. Yeah,
but Volthoom does it to Simon during the sequence where Simon is pretty much like, you know, going all boss on him and telling him how he never quits, and we get a sequence where he says willpower is spiking like Simon has done in the past. His willpower spikes and he does something incredible, you know, like I don't know, bring people back from the dead or something. But
Simon also says the N-word during this. Just
never saying. Quit.
No, he's like nigga.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he does.
Nunya.
But during that
like when he's injured, he immediately becomes racist. Like,
but yeah, Volthoom grabs his fist and breaks his ring. He overloads it with emotional spectrum energy or whatever, and his ring is shattered. Now, this isn't the first time that ring has ever been shattered. Again, if anyone knows, that Green Lantern ring is supposed to be the fusion of Hal's original ring and Sinestro's ring. So it's been broken many, many a time before.
That's probably, it was just the cracks on it. It was like a ceramic pot. It just, every time it falls, it's going to break now.
I just hate that, you know, he never lost his costume. It's like he started suffocating, but he's still got his costume on.
That's true. He does start suffocating, like, but he doesn't have his costume to stay there. Yeah,
so
weird.
He just has a costume. Like, he doesn't project
it. It's not generated by a ring.
That can also be, like, you know, indicative of his ring not being completely lost, but just unable to, like, sustain his, you know, his life force.
Sure. Or but, not, or
don't make excuses for that.
Hey, well, man. The thing is, I think that... Sorry, you're going to finish your
sentence. No, go for it.
Well, I was going to say, my larger issue with this issue is the continuity in general. Because I'm so drowning in exactly who all these characters are. You know, and as someone who, like, you know, spends an unfortunate amount of time doing Green Lantern stuff in my life, even I'm having a little bit of trouble. You know what I mean? So, and I think there's a lot of repetition and stuff. And I actually like the issue because the art was great. The side stories were kind of interesting. Simon and Jessica are kind of the weakest parts of the book, but Volthoom was kind of interesting. The art, you know, like the design was cool. The idea of him coming, you know, I didn't like.
Yeah, can I pause you there? Because I do want to, like, jump on the fact that you said that, you know, that Jessica and Simon are, like, the weakest part of the story. There is a two-page sequence where they are just complaining about how long they've been away.
I had no idea how long they've been away.
And yeah, at that point, I had no idea how long they've been away. It felt, from what they were talking about, it almost felt like they've been away for at least probably like a week or a month or so. And they literally say they've been away for like 3 days.
Oh my God, like year. And it's like, he's like, what do you miss? She's like, mint chocolate. And they list all this stuff that's like this extravagant stuff sort. Not extravagant, but stuff. And it's like pancakes, mint chocolate chip. And it's like, if you've been gone for 3 days, how often do you eat mint chocolate chip ice cream and pancakes, dude? Like, that you need to miss it after 3 days. Like, that's bad for you, man. Like, it's more concerning than anything. but the continuity in general, because Jessica's talking to Volthoom, and she's like, you're like that voice in my ring. And then I'm like, so this is the same Volthoom. And then there's a kind of implication that, no, he's a different Volthoom. And I'm like, well, why is there two Volthooms? Is one of them from another universe? How does that work? Why are there, like, super confusing.
Well,
and then
they do,
he is
they
a Volthoom from the other universe, isn't he?
Yeah, no. They do make a point as to explain why there was Volthoom in the Power Ring, and the Volthoom that's currently talking to them now. They're
right,
both the same Volthoom. It's because a piece of him was taken and made into a ring in Earth 3. You
sure,
see
okay.
that?
Well,
see
mean,
that in
sure.
the in his continuity explaining like issue that explains how he was jumping from place to place to place trying to find.
Sure,
anybody
sure.
To
or, I did forget that, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I get a little turned around all this stuff, and then you know, Rain, and the idea that Remy is a brand new Lantern Guardian that's also a Renegade Guardian, like the last 15 Guardians who also created a ring, and now we're talking about like, oh, the first Green Lanterns. Like, so we have other first Green Lanterns because we met first Green Lanterns before, and then there's a whole team of Green Lanterns that we met. Okay.
These
were
the
Guardians
first Lanterns after this asshole.
And the Guardians have yet another place that's a secret tomb, a secret place that no one knows about, and they have yet another secret team of crime fighters that they used before. They use the Manhunters before they use the Lanterns before they use it. And then like Raimi as Volthoom shows up and the guard shows up and he's like, I've been guarding this place. And he's like, no, it's cool. I work for John Stewart, who's the leader of the Corps. It's like, yeah, but I'm led to believe that John doesn't know this place exists. So why would this person know who John is? Like, you know, and I like the bit where he's like, he kind of acts like he met them before. Cause that implies to me, there's some timey-wimey shenanigans going on, which is kind of fun to think about this Guardian that's eternal who kind of has been whatever. But like, just the continuity itself is so convoluted in a bad way. And then my big thing is when I saw the cover, because I don't know if there was more than one cover, but the cover I saw is the one where they're like shooting the guy from behind. I thought it was Frank the Vague Lantern again. And I was oh, is he back? Like, and then it's like the idea being like, oh, so there's another character that we just met who had this kind of incredible power. And then also like Volthoom has two rings. Like he's got the ring that he was looking for, but he also has control of Jessica's ring. You know, it's like it's the continuity is convoluted in a bad way.
And basically, he gives him his powers, but Jessica's ring does the whole universal
traveling universe. I get that.
Jessica's ring has a piece of his original ring.
Right.
That's the entire thing.
Right. And
I guess that's the traveling piece.
Yes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so there's this level where it's like, why wasn't it should be cleaned up in a way that makes it more impactful. Because I feel like, for me, it delineates this is one of those things where the continuity is bad, because it delineates the story so much that I'm not impactfully. And also, part of that is the reveal of Volthoom. When he comes out of Bram and he's like, I've been Volthoom this whole time. It feels like, okay, I was just trying to get to this place to get my ring. And it feels like this place is kind of so new to the story. Like, we knew he wanted something, but every time he gave us a clue as to what he wanted, it was like something brand new. So there was no tie into the beginning. And why not just have him try to get Jessica's ring? Because that would make sense as why he would want to be in Rami. That would make sense why he would make a point to bring Jessica along and stuff. Not just, I got to get this ring to get your ring. Like, it's so unnecessary. And as someone who's read millions of Green Lantern comics, it's so similar to other comics, but just slightly different. Like, oh, I'm a different guy who is an ultimate original Green Lantern. Oh, I'm a different guy who created the first Green Lantern ring. Oh, I'm a different guy that has multiple Green Lantern color powers. It's too fucking much. Like, you know, it's like, I don't, Volt, and it's so unnecessarily convoluted. It just, you know, even the issue where it's like they're arguing and they get transported to some world where being turned inside out and stuff like that. I'm like, well, I mean, it seems like, what? You know, like, it's like, it just seems like so random. And like, I thought, okay, then they're gonna end up on Earth 15, you know, as he said. And then I was like, well, why is that suspenseful to me? I don't understand anything about Earth 15, because it's just yet another thing you threw out there for no reason. I don't know. I'm rambling about it.
I don't know. I would say, to like try to make sense of everything that's going down, the main reason Volthoom started this entire thing, Volthoom wanted revenge. He couldn't die because Necron, in the previous storyline where you see him, Necron drags him down to the Netherworlds or whatever, but he can't die.
No, yeah.
So Necron tells him, hey, you can't die, you gotta go do what you gotta do. So he goes out, tries to get revenge on Rami, who finally showed up with the proto ring, or whatever the fuck he was calling it at the time, because I can't remember the name of that ring anymore. But he wanted to use that for revenge on Rami, until he realized and learned that his travel lantern was still around. So he assumed the identity of Rami, goes to, like, you know, with the rest Undertow, and then figures out that his travel lantern has been broken up into different pieces and made into the first seven original rings. So he's trying now to gain the power of the ring that he gave to Frank, to use that to pretty much reintegrate himself, and then use the pieces of his ring to create his travel lantern again. One of the pieces of the travel lantern is inside Jessica's ring. So that's why he's able to control and try to do a body slide times two, because he looks like Cable. It looked like he was trying to do a body slide.
Well, I will say, but I think I do appreciate you explaining it, because that obviously, you know, yeah, great. I think I did pick up on most of that as I'm reading it. But even as you explained it, I'm like, that's way too complicated. I mean, like, in a way that's bad, because I feel like there's not a lot of story there. You know, like, I'm glad that they're introducing this, as you said, the fun team of like the White Martian and the Kaluan and the Lion Guy. I mean, fun stuff. But, you know, like, you're talking about, like, at this point, like, triple ring action. Right? He's got the super ring, and he's got another ring, and he's going to get Jessica's piece of ring. And then there's six more rings he's got to get. It's just, it's way too much. I'm just saying, like, it's convoluted in a bad way.
I'm getting a Lord of the Rings vibe.
More than likely, the main reason why they only have
one goddamn ring.
No, it didn't.
If they're going to, yes, there would
several rings to control the other cave. Critical
alert from Microsoft.
But more than likely, if they're going to go through Earth 15, the main reason why they're going to go there is to see what happened to his world after he's been gone so long. And more than likely, to see the destructive force that was taking over his planet at the time, whatever it may be, could be the Antimon.
Now we have another vague destructive element.
Yeah, because that was never really explained as to what it was. Anyway.
Yeah, well, someone should explain this to Nazir, because then maybe he'd understand why it's taking time so long to get back.
I completely still don't understand why Nazir is so hard on the fact that he can't hang out with his best friend anymore.
We should.
Except for the fact that he's like, dude, to be completely honest, I would have removed that from the book in its entirety and just had it be the thing that when Simon comes back, Nazir's like, hey, man, I'm pissed. It's like, cool, now we get to go with that and make that into its own story. But instead of having to intermingle it with like stuff that's going on that never really gets brought up, it's like, okay, so, you know, Simon has a problem with his family, never really actually ever goes anywhere. He's either wrapped up way too fast or it doesn't really matter, but, you know.
Plus, right, yeah, and then intercutting that with the letter, and they're trying to add this kind of epic sense of loss to it. Like, I'll be right back for your birthday, Nazir, even though you're a fucking full-grown man. That's not the kind of shit you say to a full-grown man. You know, but like, and then he gets lost in space, but it's like, I don't know, it all seems very, it seemed a bit hyperbolic for the what was going on.
Okay. Anyway, Brandon, you had any thoughts?
No more than that. Nope.
Colton?
I think we pretty much got through everything that was important.
Hey guys, for you, the listeners of the Green Lantern Corecast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I recommend Stephen King's Dark Tower books, all of which are available on audible.com. Get ready for the movie coming out this August by listening to the Dark Tower audiobooks by Stephen King, narrated by, what are they narrated by? No, George Goodall. Goodall? Goodall? I don't know. Some of them are narrated by Frank Miller. The first four are three of the four. Some of them are narrated by Frank Miller. Some of them are narrated by George Goodall. They're all there, available on audible.com, and you can get all of those with your free audiobook trial. Use your free audiobook trial today at audibletrial.com/lanterns. Again, that's audibletrial.com/lanterns with an S for your free audiobook.
Okay, so moving on to How to Join the Green Lantern Corps, pretty much the wrap-up of the storyline involving that guy that I'm forgetting his name. Who ended up being Power Rangers' son?
Sarko.
Sarko. Yes, and I called it. I mean, it was, you know, the last pretty much...
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you guys both did. Both of you guys were like... I remember you both were like, oh, yeah, he's probably Kyle's son. And I was like, oh, huh. Oh, okay. I
feel
like
we said that it was like Sinestro's son or something.
No, I didn't.
No. You both were like it was probably Kyle's son. Yeah.
We pretty much both thought that it was going to be Sarnik and Kyle's like kid, and it ended up being completely true.
I think the shock is that we didn't expect Kyle to know.
Well, that's true. I didn't expect Kyle to figure it out.
I think
It was one of the shocks. It's one of those things that, again, it was an interesting story. You know, green energy, the gauntlet that was, you know, Hal Jordan was using during his weird renegade run that he had the long hair and the, you know, the 5 o'clock shadow, perpetual 5 o'clock shadow.
Renegade.
But apparently got it live in his own, became a monster, and Sarko learned the details of it because Kyle Rayner apparently bragged about how great Hal Jordan was even into the future. But it's one of those stories where we get to see John Stewart make again the weirdest boneheaded move, give up the rings and fight these energy creatures barehanded, and apparently that worked. It was like one of those.
It worked so much better.
Worked so much better than having the most ultimate weapon in the universe.
Can I just say, like, why don't they just use the rings to turn the rocks into bullets and use the? I mean, like, there's so many things to use the rings for that didn't include just smashing them with the rings.
Yeah, they like creativity. They could have used their rings in a more creative usage of instead of just creating, you know, missiles like freaking Hal Jordan did the entire time. It's like weird that they didn't just decide to use, I don't know, like the energy dude who's like made out of pure like molten lava or whatever. He could have easily fought those things off without a ring.
Well, I mean, it's like, that's one of the things I think that is the biggest tragedy of us not covering the last couple of issues consecutively, because one of my favorite things about Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is how John Stewart really does make a bad decision in every single issue. And like, that's what's so sad that I couldn't catalog those issues directly. But as you said, everything about that, even the idea that at the end, the big guy saves everybody, John's like, oh, thank God. It's like, you think you could spend 5 seconds looking at who you had and being like, okay, who actually has powers, you know, like just half a thought. And the fact that like Kyle and Sornik came with guns and John's like, thank God you brought guns. It's like, why didn't you ask anybody to bring guns, you dummy? Like, there's no reason to have put, you know, you have radios with the rings. Just like, you're fucking moron.
Especially
like
a United States Marine who's like, I've been trained to survive. And like,
also,
you know,
remember that he was a Guardian for a while.
Dude, that, like, for real. Like,
that may never have been.
I don't think that might not have happened. But then, yeah, for real, though, like, straight up, like, the fact that Kyle and Sornik took time out of the fight to help people, and they're like, all right, let's get back into the fight, and let's grab some guns. And John's even like, oh, my God, where'd you get those guns? And Kyle's like, oh, yeah, we raided the army. It's like, good thinking. It's like, first off, you didn't even remember there was an armory, you dumb bastard. Like, you were shocked that there was guns. Like, you're the fucking worst, John Stewart. Like, I can't believe I had no opinion of John Stewart for the last several years, and now I just hate the man. Like, he's so terrible at his job.
That's core leader John
Stewart. Core leader Stewart.
Core leader Stewart.
Also, yeah.
Incompetence also, is a requirement to run the Green Lanterns.
I mean, look at the Guardians.
Yeah, yeah. But for as much, also without getting into it, for as much shit as I talked about at the beginning of the storyline, it's sad we can't talk about it in depth because just how I like, I thought it ended really well. So, you know.
I mean, you talk can. About it. I mean, yeah, you could just
it's a podcast. Talk about it.
Well, I will say before, I don't want to ramble because I beat too much time the last time, but my favorite part of the whole is that Kyle realizes what's going on and then flies there to stop it from happening because he thinks Sarko's going to get killed. And then he's like, oh no, I'm too late in front of everybody. Then he like moves everybody away, like, give me the body. And he like kind of flies away with the body. And then like he sits in his room later. He's like, Sarko's my son. And then like we find out the next issue, he didn't tell anybody that. So what did they think Kyle was doing? Like he ran away in the middle of the battle, went to the planet, looked really fucking bummed out and like made a point to be insistent that Sarko had to be buried or something. Like where they're just like, oh, well, Kyle got real weird at the end of this fight.
No, more than likely they're all under the exact same impression that these writers are trying to put out into the ether for all the readers is that Kyle Rayner is just, you know, a goofball, and it's like, you know, the funny guy. He's like, oh, there's Kyle again doing something wacky. Like,
There's Kyle being real stupid, living in the middle of a battle, getting sad about
there's that wacky enemy. Kyle mourning after the death of someone he just met.
Like, exactly, like, oh, Kyle, good heckle, buddy. That's hilarious. Like, you know, it's like,
oh, come on, Kyle, real men kick dead bodies.
It's fucking weird.
It is a weird call. I mean, again, calling the fact that, you know, that Sarko was, again, Kyle's kid was one of the big mysteries of the storyline, and again, it's funny that both me and Brandon called it, but it is such a weird, what does it mean?
Like, do we know if Sornik knows?
No,
she doesn't.
In the very following issue where we see them canoodling, she's like, "Hey man, I promise you a date." And Kyle's all like, remembering the dead son that they have, and he's like, hey, you should give up the Yellow Lantern ring and become a Green Lantern. And she's like, no, I gotta do this. Hey, man, just do it for me or something. And then he leaves and never says anything about, oh, yeah,
well, like my son's dead. She's like, hey, Kyle, how are you dead? He's like, you should get your tubes tied. Like, well, why? Like, I'll see you later. Like, immediately.
Like, how do you feel about morning after pills?
Jeez. Again, you're on birth control, right? You wouldn't lie about that shit, right? Like,
okay.
Because I don't use condoms because that doesn't feel right.
Focusing on issue 21.
I put on third on him.
Again, it's still one of those weird things about Kyle Rayner now being back in a relationship with like Sarah Nanatu, or proceeding to finding a trying to establish a relationship with Sarah Nanatu again, which is cool because I did like the Sarah Nick Kyle relationship, but
I'm so glad the guy just jumped right into it.
Only months before this he was madly in love with Carol Ferris.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Oh, God. That's so unresolved. She could be pregnant right now.
She could be pregnant right now.
Well, she might just be. She
is pregnant with that magical child.
Can we talk about that page for a second, though?
Yeah, like, go for it.
Like, all right, so we haven't talked about the art in enough detail. V. Ken Marion has been filling in on this series for when Ethan Van Sciver or I didn't forget our superstar's name. That's all right. Doesn't matter. V. Ken Marion is the culprit here today. And I like to say that because he's the only artist in this issue. So there's no excuse as to why Kyle is wearing his costume in one panel, his costume in the next panel, and then proceeds to go half off his costume to get in his street clothes when he's running down the hallway. I don't understand.
He's got a magic ring that creates a costume. He can just do that.
It made no sense whatsoever.
Sometimes that just happens.
It's like he took his ring off and was like, oh yeah, why am I taking my ring off? And then he put it back on.
Put it back on.
Oh, wait, like, you mean at the world. End of it?
No. Yeah. When Sorenik kisses Kyle to be like, we might die, you know, he's running down the hallway and he takes his ring off.
Yeah.
Why?
Because John said that to every Lantern. He told every Lantern to take the ring off.
But he didn't. He just didn't listen. He shows up on the battlefield in full costume.
No, he shows up on the battlefield in not full costume.
He just throws his ring back on.
He left. Okay, yeah, he did.
Why does he take off his ring anyway? Because he doesn't. We wasn't fighting, right? I mean,
he was in the infirmary with Sarnik, and then when they go into the battlefield, they both take off the rings because.
Oh, so again.
That's what John Stewart said to take for everyone to do. So they take off the ring.
No, I know that. I think I was confused about the sequence of events, like Brandon seems to be. Like,
yeah, it was. You know, at the moment they get to the battlefield, they're pretty close. They're fighting off and they're shooting everybody. And then
in my head, I'm thinking he took his ring off in the infirmary, and I was like, you don't need to do that. Like, he's like, oh, John said everybody needs to take their ring off. I was like, can't we use that for the surgery? I was like, no, man, John knows what he's doing. He's a genius.
I'm going to apologize to V. Ken Marion. I thought my bad.
They run off. They get into the fight. They, you know, battle everybody. Apparently, the green construct monsters aren't attacking them or trying to kill them. And then Kyle takes the ring off of John, who had it around his neck or something. And then that's the ring that he puts back on.
The future ring.
Yeah, the future ring he puts back on.
Why did no one else do what Kyle did and be like, who is Sarko?
John said not to, and he's dumb.
John very much didn't want to.
What's the next winning lottery number?
Future information.
It's immoral to have future knowledge, but it isn't immoral to allow Rip Hunter's future knowledge to allow them to stop the situation. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, technically, the future knowledge didn't even resolve the conflict. Even though Kyle did learn the information of who Sarko was,
you're right. Nothing to do with it. Yeah, you're right.
It didn't end. It was Hal Jordan ripping the gauntlet in half.
That didn't even work. Yeah.
Still the winner of the fight, Hal Jordan.
The thing that was so good about it is that I think that it resolved so much so quickly. I was really surprised at the end of the issue that it was done. Like, I mean, the gauntlet comes to life on one page and it's dead by like three pages later. You know, like Sarko, you find out who Sarko is, how his power works, how to stop his power. They stop him and he dies. All within, like, you know, the single issue, you know, and I thought it was pretty interesting. I thought it was, again, as somebody who was kind of like rolling my eyes when the story started, I thought it was very impactful, and I was surprised it was so short, and I thought it was kind of fun and epic and stuff. And, you know, the solution was overly simple, and I think it ended abruptly almost, you know, but I did appreciate that it had a definitive ending because, you know, also in the Green Lanterns book, as you said, Rami's been fucking around with Volthoom for like 6-7 years now. So, I mean, like, you know, but and I think the Kyle thing was well done because it was, I didn't expect them to involve Kyle in it so much, and I really didn't expect them to. I thought the Soren and Kyle thing, you know, I'm so used to Kyle getting dirt kicked in his face on the beach, you know, like, by some buff guy, that I was surprised that I thought Soren would just dump him, you know, and stuff. But I don't know. I really liked it. Yeah, it's great.
I mean, the whole
future Sun thing is silly, but. Whatever.
We'll say it's an interesting story. It doesn't have a definitive end, but sort of, like, you know, it's an ending. We got an ending. It didn't last as long. It lasted like 4 issues tops, but it is one of those things that is very vague and ill-defined. Even though we get a glimpse as to what Sarko wanted, you know, we understand that he traveled back in time in order to defeat the Green Lantern Corps because he wanted the Sinestro Corps to be, you know, loose again. He wanted them not to be neutered and become part of the Green Lanterns. But we never understand why. There's never a mention.
We'll get into it, yeah.
Yeah, they probably will get into it, but, you know, as it is, as it stands now, we don't really get a reasoning as to why Sarko did what he did or why he did what he did. He doesn't even say that he's a Sinestro fanatic. He doesn't say he's doing it because, you know, he believes in Sinestro. He believes in Sinestro Corps, but he doesn't say he believes in Sinestro himself.
Why does he believe in Sinestro Corps?
Maybe he just wanted attention from Dad.
Huh? I mean, I think it's interesting because then at the end when he dies, he's like, oh, it's too late. He implies that this was kind of planned from the beginning, which I guess it must have been because of a temporal loop, causal loop, whatever. But like, and that's interesting. But I feel, for me, another thing I liked about it is that it kind of gives me, you know, I've always, for years, I've been like, it's weird that Kyle and Sinestro don't have more of a thing, you know, because he killed his mother and, you know, because he was dating
his
daughter.
You killed my mom,
I
banged your daughter.
Yeah, I remember very well, way, way, way back in the day, that they had that issue of New Guardian, or whatever, Core, whatever it was, where he had a big fist fight with Sinestro and stuff. And the Weapon arc or whatever. Right, where he has that big, you know, he's the screen cap where he's like, I was trained by Batman, which made him get one shot and then get his ass kicked all over the place. And I was like, from that point on, I think we even talked to Tony Bedard about it. And we were like, hey, Sinestro killed his mom. And he's dating his daughter. Like, this seems like some real soap opera level stuff. And now, essentially, if the timeline tracks the way it tracks, if Sarko is Sornik, so that's Kyle is the father of Sinestro's grandson, you know, who killed his mom. And he's dating his daughter. Like, it just feels like, for me, maybe I'll finally get some kind of Sinestro-Kyle action, even though I think Sarko tries to imply that Sinestro never came back after Hal killed him and stuff like that. And I have to assume he'll be gone for... I thought he'd come right back, but I guess I have to assume he's going to be on for a little while. But, you know, for me, it's like, oh, cool, maybe they'll actually have some kind of thing. If we ever interview the writer, let's do what we've done for the last 10 or 12 Green Lantern writers we've interviewed and remind him that fucking Sinestro killed Kyle's mom.
I mean, that we're still wondering if that tracks in this universe. Brandon, what do you think of the issue?
I thought it was pretty fun. I thought it was fun stuff. Not necessarily like as exhilarating as the Vault Thun thing in Green Lanterns, but you know, it was a decent story. I thought it left us with a lot of questions, and I thought I'm not a fan of the art, but it served its purpose. You know, it wasn't like he was given like this big gigantic war he had to display. He had to do a giant robot. He did a giant robot. You know, he had to do a bunch of ugly little people running up. He did a bunch of ugly little people running up on him. Like, so, I mean, it is what it is. It kind of reminds me of, I'm blanking on his name now. The artist for, not Scott Collins, but it's definitely in the vein of Scott Collins. But I was thinking more of the early run of Mark Waid's Flash. It's got some of that art style. Ringo, Ringo. It definitely reminds me of that style. Like, definitely looking at Kyle's facial features, it definitely reminds me of Mike's artwork. It was a nice little story. I think the Kyle stuff is definitely intriguing, and I'm reminded that this is a Green Lantern core book. Like, yeah, Hal saves the day, but the most interesting thing here is Kyle Rayner, you know, and in the previous story, what was the most interesting thing? Kyle Rayner. He's like Kyle Rayner and his relationship with the Blue Lanterns. That was the most interesting thing in the last arc. And before that, it was Guy Gardner's relationship with Arkillo. And before that,
which is still barely ill-defined.
I think, what did we see in this issue? We saw, like, him and Arkillo, like, punching weights or something. It was weird. Doing a punching bag. It was weird stuff. And, like, Arkillo can't help himself but eat it. Like, it's... Anyway. I think we just need to give some credit to Robert Venditti. Every story's not going to be a knockout the park. But he's definitely
going to be the universal church of Sinestro and, you know, Sinestro blowing up on Warworld. But, you know.
Yeah, you know. It's good. Yeah. I think for the most part, he's doing what Geoff Johns promised to do when DC announced that they'd have backup stories. And that's give each character some focus. And I mean, You've got what, 7,200 sectors, I think. So good job, man. You know, focusing on the relationships and such.
I mean, no, it's a team book, definitely.
Yeah, it's very much focusing on, like, you know, the different pairings of characters, except for Jon Stewart. He gets a pair with nobody. But
well, he gets to pair out with
Salad. Yeah, him and Salad.
Salad a little bit, and Hal for like you know for most issues. But yeah, even the last issue that came out 22 with Ethan Van Sciver back in the book. It's an interesting book. They brought back one of the greatest all time Green Lantern villains, Bofunga.
Bofunga.
They brought him back.
A classic.
A classic Green Lantern bad guy.
Oh God!
Tried to kill Mogo once.
Bofunga, who was invented, I mean, as a bad joke about bad guys, and because of Geoff Johns. This fucker has been like, you know.
He had another Alan Moore character that brought back.
A lot, you know. I don't know.
I will say the character design for Bofunga has changed in this issue. But the weirdest thing about watching him, like looking at him, and the fact that it's drawn by Ethan Van Sciver, every time I saw his character design, I kept thinking, are these Red Lanterns? But I know they're
yeah,
not.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
So right. Bofunga's character, like, character design is such a weird thing in this post emotional spectrum, like, you know, universe. It's weird to see it's fun to see a character that isn't related to, like, you know, the spectrum in any way. Much like even Sarko in his, you know, limited showing was also in a way not tied into the emotional spectrum because he himself did not use the emotional spectrum
used it in an interesting way.
Exactly. It was, again, he wasn't a power that he had, you know, he was, but a power that he had stolen. It isn't a power that he is linked to, like, you know, in a way, but it is something that is familial, but it's interesting. And Bofunga is that character. He's a character that isn't really tied into he's tied into Green Lantern Mythos, but it has nothing to do with the new Green Lantern Mythos in terms of, oh, he has a red ring, or he's an indigo, or some such blue, or whatever. Coyote yellow, I don't know. It's cool, even though he's not, you know, he's always been the joke, like the joke pirate character. But it was cool to see him back in a way, and it's cool to also everyone in the book itself also go like, it's Bofunga, he's nothing, and that's great. I didn't like that happened. And it's cool, everything that's been, it was drawn pretty, I like everything. The interaction that I mentioned earlier that happens with Sardic Natsu and Kyle happens in this issue. Nothing to do with their twos being tied, but it is, you know, sort of the same.
We should mention that Bofunga was in Green Lantern Emerald Knights,
yes,
portrayed by the late Roddy Piper.
Yes, that's true. And also the same story that I said before when he goes tries to go against Mogo.
Yeah, that should have been it for him. Once he appeared in Emerald Knights, that should have been the end of
the That was the peak. Bofunga. That was the peak.
That was a peak of Bofunga. He finally made it to an actual animated featurette, which is something that most characters, I mean, even Evil Star still hasn't gotten that treatment.
Oh, man.
I mean, yeah, poor Evil Star. Well, Evil Star is a very important character. They probably just don't know quite how to adapt him yet, you know?
I mean, technically, he's only had one animated appearance, and that was Justice League Unlimited.
Has Evil Star appeared much at all in the comics since Geoff Johns teased him?
He's a huge character. They just don't want to overuse him, because they know that he's everybody's favorite Green Lantern villain.
If they overused him anymore, he might exist.
exactly what Frank's saying, I appreciate that they're showing them do something that's not Spectrum related, and I guess you gotta assume, you know, the writer of Vendetti wants to bring back some like fun characters, and Bofunga is kind of a known character and stuff, and I don't necessarily blame Vendetti,
Vendetti's doing very well in bringing up characters that aren't, again, Spectrum related. Space Cabbie, freaking, you know, fucking Bofunga.
Sure.
I know there's more, and I'm barely, like, you know, scratching the surface, but he's bringing in characters that haven't been in the limelight in a while, and actually creating a larger, you know, universe, and that's actually a little bit more populated than just in, you know, emotional spectrum characters.
Even your boy Hip Hunter.
Even my boy Rip Hunter.
Rip Hunter was great in the Booster Gold comic. I just love that comic.
Everyone needs to stop talking about that damn Booster Gold comic on this podcast. I'll tell you that for now.
Maybe you can go back in time and make us not talk about it.
Greatest book that no one ever read.
Oh, God. Are you guys read
it? No, Rebels was the greatest book that nobody ever
read. Calm down, Colton.
Goddamn Rebels. We need to read some more comics. That's like the problem, you guys.
Like I said, I'm reading out the Scrooge comics, and those have been enjoyable.
Can we talk about John Stewart's big moment where he
pats
himself on the back and he stands in the hallway like, I did it. You know? It's like, what did you do, John? I'm still trying to figure it out. Why is he so happy with himself?
They gotta win.
They've been alive this entire time.
Every win that they've had has been at the skin of their teeth, and they've lost people. This is the first win that they've had that they've not lost anybody.
Larfleeze didn't kill anybody.
You just missed the internal hype monologue he went through. He's like, I can win. I can do this. I feel great.
Listen, as much as I would like to equate Jon Stewart as Piccolo, I'm not entirely sure that that's a fair assessment. But still. He just wanted to win. He got it. He got a win. The universe saw them not fuck up.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of offhand if he had a fuck up in this issue, but I think the embarrassing I did it in the hallway is on a life fuck up. Like that should be a moment he looks back on for years and is like, why did I do that? That's so embarrassing. I'm such a fucking loser. I mean, I think this is another one of those, like, oh, Vance Skyver draws it, and now it's at that point where Vance Skyver used to be, like, the draw of, like, oh, he's going to draw the book once in a while, and now it's kind of like, I mean, his issues are, I feel like, as much as the art for the Starco run Rip Hunter thing wasn't, like, the best thing I've ever seen, I mean, it had more energy and function and stuff, and I just, I think Vance Skyver has become the weak link on the book.
I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah, no, we knew that 2 issues in when
I know, but I just
when Sandoval like, was killing it.
It does feel like a damn shame though, because like you know he was there at the beginning of the Green Lantern Rebirth, as it were, literally.
He's so stylish, and he draws the heck out of it, and he's still got the thing where he does black space on the suits, and you know he draws a lot of detail you wouldn't see in a lot of the characters and stuff. But I just his anatomy is not really great, his spatial storytelling is not really great. I mean, this story was kind of a fun story because it was basically just a lot of one-liners and splash pages and fun stuff happening and a lot of kind of inconsequential stuff to start off the next few issues and stuff. And so it could have been fun, but I feel like, you know, it could have been fun with good art. You know, we saw, you know, Sandoval doing stuff with these kind of – I was talking so much shit about this book. It was so great, but there was nothing going on. And, you know, it was really saved by the art. And I think this is kind of like where you see that sort of – you know, you see that weakness.
I will say that there during that sequence I was having before where Kyle Rayner's on the Serenade Natsune and she's like saying how she owes him a date, and you see the little panel of Kyle remembering his dead son, lifeless body of his son, like lying in front of him. That is drawn by a completely different artist.
No, well, that's, yeah, isn't that just a recreation of the panel? I thought that was just a copy paste of the panel.
He pressed X to Jason.
I mean, look at the page where, if you guys have it in front of you, there's a page where you see Archilo using a snake to do something at the same time Arisia is using a net to do something, and the ships, there's no three-dimensional planning on these ships, and one ship looks like it's forward and sideways, and you know there's so much line work going on and no delineation, and the colorist isn't helping and stuff, and the colorist is doing it as best they can, but just I don't know, you know,
But that flying fist that Hal Jordan does at the viewer, now it's amazing.
Plus, don't they also have like 5 times they put the logo of the comic inside of the word balloons in this issue?
So many times. Anyway, I think that's pretty much it about the issue itself. I mean, we pretty much enjoyed it for the most part. Everything that was happening in the Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Core book itself, interesting stuff with Sarko, Bullfunga making a comeback. Stuff was going on in Green Lanterns itself, you know.
He's been here for years.
The fun poem in the beginning, or not poem, but the poetically written beginning was actually kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, about some guy who opens up a laser fence or something. But still, all good stuff. And I hope you, the listeners, enjoyed it, even though we went off into a tangent multiple times. Hopefully you enjoyed our rants and reviews of Green Lantern. Hopefully you enjoyed our news that we're bringing, that we like brought up. And again, hopefully you'll listen to us in the future where we bring up more Green Lantern-related material in the hopefully not-too-distant future. Maybe 2 weeks, hopefully not a month. Till next time, Stay green.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @theGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic green. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What?